Yeah, and so this changes the equation of the power dynamics both between countries and also between companies, right? Because it used to be if you have to have giant data centers, you need to spend billions or tens of billions or hundreds of billions to be a player. Now, anybody with a laptop in their basement can be a player.
Welcome to the Big Bang Tech Report, where we explore the technologies reshaping business, power, and society. Elvren, great to see you.
Yes, always good. There's so much going on in the world. I'm looking forward to our chat today.
Oh, yeah, that's incredible. It's not, I would say, well, wanted to say amazing, but it's not everything amazing.
Nope.
It's first, it's incredible, and sometimes it's horrible. So let's start with a topic that suddenly feels very immediate for us all. With the current US-Iran escalation sending shockwaves through energy markets, supply chains, stock markets, cyber risks. And what does this conflict mean to the global tech industry?
Yeah, so I mean, I know everybody's very concerned on the geopolitical side, but you know, given that our report is about technology, I think it's important that we try to give a different light to that information. You know, we've been talking about how energy is the key for making AI work, and I think that the disruption to energy is actually really important because what it shows is that you know, petroleum is something that is not necessarily the most dependable form of energy, and so the things that has been happening over the last few years of the clean energy, the solar, wind, so forth, and nuclear, which a lot of places have discounted, is now going to be increasingly important because that's something that is, you know, local, controllable, and available, right? And increasingly cheap, actually. So I think that's something that's interesting. The other thing that's just happened the last couple of days is the bombing of the data centers, right? So what that does is it shows that, you know, data centers is now a asset around the world that could be targeted in case there's different types of conflict, which, you know, if you're going to be spending in the case of US something like $600 or $800 billion this year on new data centers, this is a very lots of potential targets, and this is happening around the world where, you know, companies and countries are building data centers everywhere. So that is a concern. In fact, I think there's going to be a reduction in data center production, particularly in the US, because a lot of those data centers were invested or funded in part, at least, by Gulf states. And right now, a lot of the money is actually being pulled back. They're saying, hey, you know, we have a force majeure. We cannot, you know, put money out right now. We needed to rebuild our own countries or whatever. So I think that changes a lot of the equation in terms of how the buildouts are going to happen. Also, you know, transportation, with all the disruption to oil, transportation is going to get more expensive, which means everything that gets shipped around the world, all of those computers and machines and cars, will also get much more expensive. That's going to affect a lot of just almost every aspect of our lives. So there's a lot more impact on this than people realize.
Yeah, normally we say that, or the question is for this, for growth and AI growth, the challenge is energy. So you need a lot of energy for the chips and for the factories and all this stuff, you know. So do you think that this conflict is a question of AI too, of this AI challenge to need a lot of energy?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, a year ago, people used to think having chips is the key. And in the last 3 to 6 months, people have moved to saying having enough energy is the key because now you have chips and you can't turn them on, right? There's a lot of data centers now that are waiting to turn them on because they don't have enough generators or just power access, so that, you know, you're investing billions of dollars into chips that are just sitting there being depreciated. So this is the AI race is highlighting the importance of energy. And right now, on a global basis, China is really, you know, has a lead on that, right? They're building so much clean energy. In fact, every 2 years, they can rebuild in clean energy the entire power generation of the United States. This is, it's amazing.
It was more or less a strategic decision to, to conquer Iran because of this energy question.
I don't think so. I mean, you know, I'm not a geopolitical analyst, but from what I've seen and also the people I've talked to, and I do have friends in DC who are looking at this, it is a lot more of a geopolitical issue than it is a factor of technology race. It's some people, you know, are saying that it may be even related to, you know, closing down oil for China, you know, taking away both the Venezuelan oil as well as the Iranian oil that you know, brings down the Chinese economy. I feel that might be a little bit of a conspiracy theory. I think there's just more direct reasons why this is probably happening, and it probably has to deal with more with Israel than anything else. So.
I think it was the last Gulf War was only for a few days. You know, I was working that time at a magazine, and we wanted to write a cover story. And when we were producing it, the war was almost over. Do you think this war will be over in a few days? And what is Plan B if not?
Well, clearly, this is a different type of a war, and. I think it's the way that it was designed. On the first day, you kill the supreme leader, and you know, you're probably also familiar with the Muslim religion and the importance of that, and what it signifies, and how it unifies the people, and how it creates a intensity of response. In the past, it was really more, you know, just you're destroying a particular location where nuclear energy or nuclear bombs might have been, refined. But that's topical. This is around faith and around a culture. I think it'll be very difficult for this to end very quickly. And in fact, I'm very surprised that America decided to agree to that type of a strategy, because it really pulls itself into another endless war that, you know, we've had multiple over the last few decades. And I would have thought you would have learned from that. But it feels like there's a little too much influence in terms of Israeli strategy on U.S. actions.
But it has to end because of the markets in the Western couldn't afford it, that we have for months such a situation. If there is no energy anymore, there will be a real big crisis.
I think there is a desire from the U.S. side to want to end it, and I think, you know, that's what Trump was trying to say when he sent a message out saying, oh, Iran called me to say they wanted to discuss a ceasefire, which was supposedly, I guess it was complete BS, but it was more wishful thinking, right? The reality is that for it to end, both sides have to want it to end. And right now, I think there's a greater desire on the side of the U.S. to see it end quickly than there is on the side of Iranians. In fact, the Iranians probably want to have America send, you know, troops, send boots on the ground, because when that happens, Iran actually has a bigger advantage. You know, this is what happened in Vietnam. This is what happened in Afghanistan. It does not end well for America, and it is a big draw on its capabilities. But we'll see if the U.S. is smart enough to stay away from that type of a decision.
So, what is your advice?
I don't know if I'm in the position to advise, but I think that the faster you can end this, and maybe even unilaterally stop and just say, okay, we made a mistake, that's probably the best thing for America to do, because at the end of the day right now, it's running low on munitions. It is running low on all the defense systems. The energy is being shut down to, you know, lots of Europe and many parts of the world. It is going to be a disaster for the world, for the life and the economy of the world. And also reputation for America. The longer this goes, the worse it is for America.
And I've read in the news that they asked for help from Ukraine with drones, with the drone technology. Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't it bizarre?
It's a little bit flipping of the scenario. We know what happened a few months ago when Zelensky went to visit Trump, and I think it's now kind of flipped the other way. Yeah, I don't know if that even helps, right? Because drones. What they need right now is actually they need the more missiles, for anti-missile missiles, right? And they just can't make them. I mean, America's manufacturing capabilities are in maybe the hundreds of these a year. And Iran has something like tens of thousands of missiles that it can send out. And it takes several counter-anti missiles to get one attacking missile. So the ratio is just not there. And the costs of the Iranian drones and Iranian missiles are in the tens of thousands or maybe low millions, whereas for the big missiles, whereas the U.S. are going to spend millions of dollars, maybe tens of millions per tens of thousands of costs. So it's a war that you cannot win, right? It's a fight you cannot win.
But you can really imagine that somebody, or maybe Mr. Trump himself, your president, that he will say, "I have done a mistake."
I don't see it happening, and particularly with the pride that he has, and with the group around him that is so sycophantic that they will say whatever he wants to hear, which is why I'm very disappointed that this started, because that's why I think the war is going to keep going, because he does not necessarily have the will or the understanding of the situation to do the right thing. So
there are so incredible things going on. And one thing you sent me last days was a news from Apple that Apple could be a major competitor of NVIDIA. Why is it like that? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this before, and I think it's two different strategies in terms of not necessarily actually just NVIDIA, but I think against the current trend is that they've been seen as the company that hasn't spent the hundreds of billions that the other big American companies have on AI, and people think
they are a bank.
Yeah, and
more or less, Apple is a bank.
Yeah, and they still have hundreds of billions in the bank that they can spend whatever they want with. Whereas most of the other major technology companies have been spending their free cash flow and the reserves on all this new infrastructure build and on the investments for that. But what they have done is they have built an amazing piece of an ecosystem of hardware from the phones all the way up to their laptops and PCs, which have the capability to run the AI models. And I think, I don't know if they did it intentionally or they lucked into it, but essentially now that the capabilities of these small models that are coming out that are, Quen from Alibaba just came out 3.35, which is a small model that is 2, 4, and 9 billion parameters, but they perform as well as the 100 billion parameter models from the other vendors, right? So if that's the case, you can run this directly on your phone, not even on the new MacBooks. And you can run the full-size Quen or the full-size Mini Macs on your laptops now, right? Which is kind of crazy, because now that means that all of these data centers that all these companies have been investing in becomes a lot less necessary, right?
Obsolete.
Yeah, and so this changes the equation of the power dynamics both between countries and also between companies, right? Because it used to be you have to have giant data centers, you need to spend billions or tens of billions or hundreds of billions to be a player. Now anybody with a laptop in their basement can be a player. In fact, they now had just made a new model that you can now train the Quen models on a laptop. With only like I don't know, 32 gigabytes of memory, right? So essentially any just slightly better than average laptop can start training models, not just run models, but to start training models.
So with your brain and maybe with my two laptops, we could be a competitor of ChatGPT. Is that what you are saying?
Not necessarily ChatGPT in the sense of they have an existing user base that takes a lot of money to create. But the capabilities of what ChatGPT can offer, or the services that a lot of these software providers can offer, now a small company can start to do that. In fact, a few episodes ago, we talked about the one-person company. And I think that's now much more valuable than any time ever. And in fact, we were talking about China, where In Shenzhen, they just one of the essentially the Silicon Valley of China. Their government now just offered a special program to fund and support OpenClaw and one person companies. It's kind of crazy, right? That they moved so quickly over there that their local government now saying, okay, we're going to have this special support program. If you are a smart guy who has a good idea, we'll give you some funding, we'll give you infrastructure, you build a company, and you can just be one founder, and we will support you and get you out to market, right? And I think that in some
could,
ways...
Could you be give us an example? What could it be? If you are one person, what kind of product do you produce and to convince the market? Give me some imagination, please.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think a lot of these ideas are just starting. So it's not clear what will be successful, but it could be, let's say, a one-person consulting company, right? It could be a one-person accounting services company. It could be a one-person, search engine optimization company, right? So a lot of these services that now AI, if you program it properly, you can do, and it doesn't take a lot of people to do it for you. One tax preparation services, right? You send me your data.
Advertising, maybe an advertising company.
Yeah, an advertising copy creation for you. You send me your product, I'll make you a whole ad campaign. One person can do that today with the AI tools, right? So a lot of these services, first it commoditizes all the big companies. It's going to be very disruptive. Two is that it empowers small companies or small individuals with small resources to now think bigger. And especially now, if you have governments that are behind it, say, okay, this is one of our portfolio companies that are part of the city plan. They have credibility because they know at least these companies will probably be around for at least a year. So I can trust working with them. Whereas if it was just, Jens and Alvin starts a company, they may not trust that we'll be around in a year. So it's interesting that in an effort to grow local economy, that these local governments are moving so quickly.
Yeah. Last year I was in Austin at I attended the South by South, and there is a star. She is Amy Webb, and we were listening to her, and she told us, hello, Amy, we will see each other in a few days. Yes. And she told us that maybe in a few months you have a budget, maybe $1,000. You invest it and you say to the system, please, I need a script, I need a movie, I want to have a blockbuster, and show me on Monday, next Monday, a trailer I can look at, and then I need a soundtrack and merchandising. Mm-hmm. And all of this, it will be done by AI and by data centers. Do you think it becomes realistic?
I think if you have a technical savvy founder, that is possible with good creativity skills, right? So you still need a combination of skills, and you still need to check. I don't think the technology is there to do everything that you just said and to do it perfectly, but it will definitely make your efficiency go up 10x, so that all you need to do is some minor tweaks and reviews. And the good news about the current agents models now is that they all have built-in memory systems and skill systems, which means that you teach it one time and it starts to learn and it starts to become smarter and more proficient in whatever skill you want to have it hone. And it starts to be able to copy your capabilities over time. And I think that's the key.
So that means if I'm a director of a movie and I'm working a lot with my system, the system is becoming smarter and smarter in the movie business, right?
Exactly. And in fact, there's these essentially skills.md files that you can create to say, okay, I'm going to make a director.md file. I'm going to make a creative director, a scriptwriter.md file. And here are the rules that I want you to think about. In fact, go on the internet, look for all of the writings about how to direct, and put those the biggest, best learnings from the best directors in the world and make that your base learning. And then we can adjust from that, right?
But that means that I'm addicted or binded with one system one day or not.
No,
I cannot switch.
No. So this is the beauty of what's happening today. Is that you have all these skills that are in a file that is on your computer, and you can move it to any other model. In fact, your agent should be selecting whatever model you want to. So the we talked about OpenClaw. OpenClaw allows you to pick any logic model, and essentially the .md file gets loaded into the context of whatever model you choose. So today, I mean, you might want to use ChatGPT or GPT-5. Tomorrow, you might want to use Opus or Claude. And the next day, you might want to use Minimax because they just came out with a new version, right? And all of your skills stay with you, but you find the model that is the smartest and most capable and cheapest. That's actually, and the last part is actually becoming more important because agents use so many more tokens, 10 times, 100 times more tokens than using chat. And so managing the cost per token becomes so much more important. And in fact, the open source models are now at least 10 times cheaper than the closed source models. So this is why, I don't know if you've looked recently in OpenRouter, the top three out of the four most popular models now are open source Chinese models because they are so much cheaper and they're 95% or 98% as good. And so this is, and in the age of agents, that cost management makes a huge difference because if you don't manage it well, it could cost you thousands of dollars a day in tokens. If you manage it well, it could be tens of dollars a day.
But normally with my mindset and if I'm training all the systems, the company have to pay for me or not?
Which company? What do you mean?
No, well, the hyperscaler. If I do all my mindset, my brain into the system and the system is learning, they use all my information, and then they have to pay me for that or not?
No, I mean, actually, you're not training the hyperscaler. You're training your own model. You're training your own agent. And that agent stays with you. You can move it to whatever hyperscaler, whatever cloud, whatever online model or local model you want. So this is actually, it builds asset for the individual versus bringing data to a OpenAI or an Anthropic. So this is actually more empowering for an individual, right? And you have to pay a little bit in terms of both energy and as well as maybe some token costs for the high-end models, the high-end online models.
And I thought that I will find with you a source of earnings that I will be rich with my new system.
I think there it is possible. I mean, there will be people who come up with some new companies that they will run by themselves or a few people, and I think they will be very successful. But unfortunately, these things are relatively rare, right? And good companies, I think in the age of AI, people think, oh, everybody's going to be an entrepreneur. I don't see that happening because it is becoming, it'll be more and more competitive to be a provider of these services because everybody can do it. And so now margin goes to essentially zero.
But I was dreaming of a new job, earning money without doing anything, like sitting on or lying on the beach, and then the money is coming with a helicopter, and it will fall down and all this stuff. And I thought, with the new world you are explaining to me, I'm coming closer to my vision or to my dream and so on. But I have to work still. I have still to work for it.
Well, no. So I think there will be a short period of time, maybe for the next 1 to 3 years, where there will be arbitrage opportunities where there's a lot of, let's say, elderly people who are not tech savvy, you may be able to offer them a service that they don't have access to yet, right? And maybe by the time they figure it out or their grandchildren come and help them install another service, you still have a short period to offer them something. Another thing that also is possible is people who are doing stock trading, right? I remember during the late 90s, day trading was a big thing. I think for some period, people are starting right now to use these AI models, agents, to go online and trade on Polymarket or trade on options markets or trade on crypto markets, right? So, and supposedly they're getting good results. And I think some of it might be hype, but again, those are narrow windows when that is available until the market becomes efficient. And the more efficient it is, the less opportunity there is.
So you see more and more opportunities in the next 1 to 3 years. Opportunities, you told me something that in China, something is going on very interesting with the battery industry. And for us in Germany, that's very important because we are the car manufacturer of the world, or we used to be the car manufacturer. No, we are still, come on.
Yes.
So we used to be, and what's going on in China?
So BYD last week just announced their new Blade battery system, as well as their supercharging system. So this is actually very, very impressive, where they can go from 0 to 80% in 5 minutes. From 10% to 80% charge in 5 minutes, right? And it's a charge to give you 1,000 kilometers of range. So essentially, you know, plenty for almost anyone. And then here's the very interesting part is that most people say, oh, but you know, the last 20%, that's the hardest part. They can go from 20% to 97% in 9 minutes. Right. And then people say, oh, but in the cold weather, it doesn't work. And then they went to -20°C, the temperature, went down to 20%, and they went from 20% to 97% in a -20°, C, and it took, I think, 11 minutes. Right. So I think it is a breakthrough, and it's using a traditional LFP battery. So it's not using some kind of a new material. So this is very affordable, cheap battery that can now do all of this with very fast charging, and very long range. So it's very impressive what's happening, and this will make EVs much more affordable, and also a lot less of the battery fear, anxiety that people have, right? So it makes sense, I think, for German automakers to start talking to BYD more, maybe do some kind of a partnership, maybe license this technology, because they, you know, they definitely have something competitive there. So.
Okay, I will call these guys later on to tell them. Maybe they should call you, that you can explain it again.
No.
I
think they probably already know the news. This is a very big news in the auto space. So,
yeah, well, this is so incredible. Years ago, well, we went to China to see the museum, to see the Great Wall, and now there is innovation, AI, and all this stuff. You know, it's really incredible what you're telling. And in every session here, we are talking about, well, more or less 20-30% about China, and in a good way, in an interesting way.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's... you know, in fact, I don't know if you know, but last week was the two sessions. It's kind of the big yearly planning session for China. And in fact, they also released their 5-year plan. And in their 5-year plan, the word AI was mentioned 50 times, more than 50 times. Yeah. So I mean, and this is part of their national strategy, right? Of what we're going to focus on. And so it's very impressive to see a government so progressive and so technology savvy.
But it's interesting that you are telling us that 50 times AI, because here in the news, do you know what the people were talking about?
What?
Now, that there is no a big growth anymore, that the growth is only 2 or 3%, and that's nothing. And they said, okay, the former times when this economy was growing 7, 8% are over, and so more or less, well, it's not so important anymore. That was the main message here in Germany.
Yeah, so I mean, I think different parts of the world have different focus. But the thing I want the audience to understand is that it's not that important who invents the technology. It's the most important thing is who deploys the technology, who diffuses it to the industry and to the economy, right? So if it's invented in China and it's available and you can license it and you can put it out to the market, great, you should do that. I mean, we just talked about the batteries and technology. Why not? I mean, who cares who invented it? So even though, you know, Europe in general right now is behind in the invention side, there's no reason they should be behind on the diffusion side. In fact, if anything, I think it, because of the industrial might and infrastructure that Germany has, it is in a very good position to deploy, you know, robotics, to deploy all of this automation, to also deploy the AI into the office work, because of the good social safety net, it allows it to be deployed without creating employment and economic shock, right? You look at America, I don't know if you saw last week the Jack Dorsey announcement from Block. They laid off 40% of their workers overnight, right? And because, well, they say it's because of AI, and I probably believe them. But the thing is that the surprising thing was the next day, the stock went up 25%. Right, and what that shows is that the stock market rewards the decision to lay people off. So there's no sympathy or empathy for human employment in America. Right, this is going to be a big issue, because when AI becomes more capable, and it's becoming increasingly more capable every day, it will be diffused into industry, into enterprises. And if everybody takes these decisions to lay off 40 or 50% of their employees overnight, that economic shock is going to create major instabilities in the American market. I see that a lot less the case in places like Germany or you know, most of Europe, where there's a lot more protection for labor.
But I think there is no alternative to use new technology to be in the market, to have success in the market, in the global market. And that was, for me, the first time, a good news 2 minutes ago when you said deploy it, you must invent it. And I think we still in Germany, we have the opportunity to deploy the new technology, because we are here engineers, we are in a good shape with that. And that's maybe for this session, it's a good news to end. Yeah. That we are still there, and that we have still opportunities if we adapt the new things we are talking about in this broadcast too.
Yeah, exactly. In this show. So the key is, it does not matter where it's invented. If it's good for you, use it, deploy it. That's going to, you know, grow the economy. And I think, you know, getting it to a higher, you know, maybe not back to 7 or 8%, but getting it higher to 3 or 4% is a very viable type of a goal. If the leadership is really leveraging what's coming versus being afraid of what's coming.
Yeah, we have had it in our DUB Unternehmer magazine. We have shown more than 30 entrepreneurs with best cases, and they are happy with that. And it's starting, it's emerging. And so let's talk about it in the next months, how to solve problems and how to find solutions and to be more profitability. Yeah, that's a challenge for me, Alvin. Thank you very much. Yeah. And it's always great to talk to you. And let's look what is happening in the next 14 days. I will have been in Austin, and maybe, and I would love it, that the war is over and that one big thing will end. And thank you again.
Yeah, well, and always great talking with you. And I hope we have better news to share next time.
Yeah, next time. And if you like this, what we are talking about, subscribe us and give us some comments too. And see you next time. And thank you very much.
And share it with your friends.
Yeah, share it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.